future's ours, and it begins now.
Welcome to the Yards to Peak of Civilization podcast, the official podcast of Never Fear's Desert of the Real. I am Never Fear, of course, and this is my podcast. Today we'll be talking about scenes I like from movies I don't like, get into a discussion of whether Miss Carrie Prejean wants us to love her or hate her, get into some newsies, and along with some other stuff, and eventually we'll get into our review of X-Men Origins Wolverine, a new film directed by Gavin Hood and starring Hugh Jackman as... Oh, well, you get the idea. But first, I'd like to talk to you about something close to me, near and dear to my heart, and that is really, really shitty movies. Now, when I say shitty movies, I don't mean like, the first X-Men had some good points in it, but all in all, it was shitty. No, I mean 100% pure grade A horrible films, which inspired me to do my segment, Scenes I Like from Movies I Don't Like. And I've got three of them to put on the table this week. One of them, of which, is a really old movie, one of those cheesy 80 ones. It stars Miss Cynthia Rothrock, a female badass, in quotation marks, of course. But when I saw this movie, I just wanted to hug someone, because someone actually took the time to make this piece of shit. Someone actually wrote words on a page and said, hey, this would make an awesome kick-ass movie starring Cynthia Rothrock. Oh, yeah. And you know what? That first movie? Undefeatable. That's right. Undefeatable. Ugh, my God. I spent so much time watching this movie, and after that I had to get a colonic, take a long shower, and think about what I've done, because I just wasted about 90 minutes of my somewhat young life. And I gotta tell you, I had to find long, long, long passages in which to sort of cleanse the soul. And one of those passages happened to involve a fight scene. And this is the aforementioned scene that I like. And it is hilarious. I love this scene. Now, before I get into the actual scene of this movie, and you're thinking, this movie has scenes in it? I would like to acknowledge the plot of this film, and it's about Cynthia Rothrock, who tries to avenge her sister's death at the hands of a, wait for it, a crazy martial arts rapist. And who is that crazy martial arts rapist? Well, none other than Stingray. Yay! He has a name that also happens to be an animal. Yes. Just like the flu happens to be associated with pigs. That's right. The villain in this movie is a fucking underwater creature. Now, having said that, this whole movie is just completely unwatchable. But the only scene that I watched, which was worth mentioning, is the fight scene. And there's a fight scene between this Stingray and some dude named Nick DeMarco, who's played by John Miller. And it is one of the most horribly choreographed fight scenes in my life. I mean, there's a few shots where it's literally like someone's face, and then the fist comes in, and you see the fist landing in the face, but it's like a little bitch slap. It's like a fist bitch slap. And this goes on for like a few seconds. And then at one point, he starts tearing off his clothes. And then the other guy tears off his clothes like he's a Power Ranger or something. He sort of transformed. They got these greasy, oily muscles. And it's very sickening. And then you can literally tell that they're like blocking the shot. At the same time, they're like, okay, punch. Okay, kick. I'm going to kick you. Now I'm going to punch you. And it just goes on for like 3 minutes. And then at one point, Nick slams Stingray into a nail that happens to be conveniently placed on the wall. And it pokes his eye out. And he's screaming this little sissy scream like, And he's trying to fight with one hand because he's holding his eye. And his eye is gone. So he's like swinging around like that. And then Christy Jones comes in and starts to fight him. But in the movie, her arm got broken. So she's fighting with a fucking cast. Which is pretty cool because at one point she does a flip. And I'm like, yes! She did that with one arm. Like, wait a minute. That's completely stupid. So anyway, back to the show. So at one point, he's still fighting with the one eye. And then he grabs her by the neck. And Nick starts kicking him in the back of the head. And he hits a hook. And his hook, his eye socket, his empty eye socket, is caught by his hook. And then, boom, Nick pushes the button. And Stingray is lifted high above the heavens. And he's still kicking, all the while hanging from this fucking hook. And it is hilarious. Like, he survives for like 2 to 3 minutes with the hook in his brain. It's classic. And then, to put the icing on the cake, Christy and Nick deliver this wonderful bit of dialogue. And so with that ends one of the worst fight scenes of all time. Now, I must say, I'm a fan of Cynthia Rothrock, and I own a lot of her movies. But this movie, you have to see for yourself. You have to see that scene, you have to see this movie. You have to see all her movies, because they all suck so bad. And I got to tell you this. She's not bad looking. So, if you like stuff like that, definitely check this movie out. Now, the next movie on my list is a little bit more recent than, say, an 80s cheesy martial arts flick. Now, this one is very original, you know, in its plot and its execution and its style. You know, the movie is simply about corrupt cops and the people who try to stop them. You know, because I've never, ever in my life ever heard a plot like that before. Now, the name of this movie is, of course, Pride and Glory, the new film directed by Gavin O'Connor, starring Edward Norton, John Voight, and Mr. In Bruges himself, you know, fucking Bruges, Colin Farrell. Now, I actually didn't hate this movie. I kind of enjoyed it, you know. It's definitely trying to go for that Training Day style. You know, that whole gritty cops and, you know, shades of gray area thing that, you know, we all know and love in these cop movies. So, it goes without saying that the movie isn't entirely original. I mean, it tries to do kind of original things, but at the same time, it's something that we all definitely have seen before. But, you know, there's a great scene towards the end. Well, the ending, first of all, is... I should get this out of the way. The ending, first of all, is definitely going to scream Training Day to those who've seen this movie. You know, it just says it out loud in big, bold letters, you know. And I hate to say it, I hate to make that comparison, but it just has a sort of vibe to it. You know, kind of like how Street Kings and Harsh Times had that exact same Training Day vibe, mainly because it was from this dude who wrote it. You know, so having said that, one of the best things in the movie, namely one of the more implausible things, is happens to be that the fight scene, you know, in this, the X-Men Origins film, which I'm going to review at the near the end of this podcast, has a lot of fighting. But this one had one particular memorable fight, and that was the fist fight in the bar. And that's kind of a spoiler, but you know, there's a fist fight between two of the main characters, you know. Wild guess as to who they are. And it was stays exactly how you would think two normal people in real life would fight. Which was pretty refreshing, you know, because you see, like, you know, okay, hit this mark, push this guy here, take this guy here. You know, but this one was more balls to the walls, down and dirty, gritty stuff. And it was definitely one of my favorite scenes in a movie that I found kind of okay. But anyway, the fist fight is one of my favorite parts because, considering everything that happened before this film, the perfect way to sort of cap off this mediocrity, mediocrity is what I was trying to say, mediocrity, is to have a fist fight in a bar while there's a riot going on. Okay? So, the only way to apparently settle your differences as cops is to sort of duke it out with alcohol, you know, and top 40 in the background. And it's very thrilling, as a matter of fact. It lasts about a good 3 or 4 minutes. But, you know, it's one of those things that I keep near and dear to my heart. You know, I always love a good fight. You know, especially between two actors that I'm very quite fond of. You know? So, it's always nice to see two of them just beat the shit out of each other. Because otherwise, I would have nothing to go for this movie. You know, it's very plain, you know. But then again, there's always a, you know, there's always the baby face in the iron. You know, that's always fun. And, you know, the blatant racist remarks. And the end, you know, when Colin Farrell's character dies, it's very reminiscent of Training Day. You know, it's like the character, the villain who you want to see get his in the end, gets his by other means instead of, like, the hero, like, dispatching of him or, you know, going to jail, things like that. And that's sort of a really interesting topic you find in superhero movies, is that oftentimes the hero never actually kills the villain. The villain is actually killed by his own device or by another means, you know. It's never like Superman will point a gun and shoot someone in the face. Like, that will never happen. My chance is Lex Luthor will fall into a pit, only to live again. And again. And again. But, I find it interesting that in a movie like X-Men Origins Wolverine, you know, Wolverine does the killing because he is a badass. You know, in the first 10 minutes, even as a kid, he kills someone. You know? And I just think that's cool. It's a nice change of pace to have, you know, a movie in which the hero, the protagonist of the movie, gets to do some killing instead of just having someone trip over a banana peel. You know? And I love that. You know, you gotta love that because it's a nice change of pace. The movie itself, however, not so much. And I'll get to that eventually. But right now, let's move on to my third and final movie. Movie scene, I should say, in which I liked. And this movie, I definitely don't like. I mean, it could have been good, it could have been entertaining, but it's just terrible. You know, and looking at the Comic-Con footage and all the bad blood surrounding this movie, you can easily tell that this movie is going to be one of the worst pieces of adaptations in cinema history. And that, my friends, is The Spirit. That's right, the movie written for the screen and directed by Frank Miller, starring Gabriel Mock, Eva Mendes, and, you know, Mr. Motherfucking Snakes on the motherfucking plane himself, Samuel Jackson. Where is my beer? Now, Mr. Samuel motherfucking Jackson, as I like to refer to him, he has the Toilet's a Funny line, which has been sort of permeated throughout the internet, which is no surprise. And hearing it in a movie it's exactly how awful to your ears it would want to be. It's that bad. Okay? It's just that bad. I mean, the movie itself, it's obviously trying to steal off that Sinsy vibe, which is kind of obvious because Frank Miller did co-direct Sin City. Although looking at this movie, I seriously question how much he co-directed. Now, the scene in question is not necessarily a scene, per se. It's more like a moment. And it's the most beautiful few seconds of this otherwise forgettable movie. And that is the naked scene. Yeah, I said it. A few seconds of nakedness. Now, I don't know if it was Eva Mendes or if it was a stunt double, but she had the nicest ass I've ever seen so far. But it was so good seeing those last few seconds. And it's in a PG-13 movie, you know. I saw partial nudity, but I also saw partial nudity in X-Men Origins, you know. It was like half of a butt, you know, like the top half of the ass, you know what I'm saying? I mean, other than the booty, you know, which is very nice, by the way, there's really nothing to say about this film at all. It's terrible. You know, I mean, Frank Miller, you think a guy who wrote The Dark Knight Returns, Sin City, and all this other stuff could have come with something a little bit more interesting, but he didn't. He failed. He failed, okay? And he tried to make Sin City /300, and it died a horrible death. You know, and I wanted to cry so badly when I heard this, you know, because the spirit could have actually been good. You know, there's an interesting concept there about a guy who was killed and now has come back to exact revenge, you know, and this whole idea that, you know, this city is like his lover, you know, she provides for him and things like that, you know. That could all have been done so much better than it was in this movie, and it wasn't. You know why? Because Frank Miller can't direct for shit. You know, granted, it is a comic book movie, and there are certain comic book elements, but that doesn't mean you have to focus on those elements. And that's exactly what he did. He took what could have been a great comic book movie, and basically tried to make Sin City 3. And he failed. Again. So please, don't give this man any more movies. Please don't let him do Sin City 2. Let him write Sin City 2. And hopefully Mickey Rourke can change his mind and play Marv. Because I would really like to see Marv again. He was great. And seeing Mickey Rourke in The Wrestler, you know, without the makeup, and him reminding me of Marv, I would love to see that again. I would love it. But, you know, he said he wasn't going to do it, so I'm a little disappointed. But hopefully, with all his success, he'll want to come back and do it. I'm just saying. Mickey Rourke, if you ever listen to audio podcasts, please, please do Sin City 2 and make us all proud. Please. Maybe he'll get a Golden Globe. Who knows? You know? But I have to give the Razzie to Frank Miller. Because he should never be even allowed to operate a camera. Don't even look at a camera. You know what? Just stick to the script writing, stick to the comic books, and stick to showing 5-second shots of gorgeous asses. Because that apparently is what it should do best. So, folks, that brings us to the end of the Scenes I Like from Movies I Don't segment. That, of course, is a working title, which I'm still trying to shorten. But we'll stick with that for now. Now it's time for a little something I like to call Newsies, where we take actual news and then prison rape it to death with more news. So basically what we do is like Mad Libs 1.75, which is we take regular news and then we mix it with real news to make fake news. And if you don't know what that means... Excuse me. If you don't know what that means, neither do I, because I literally just came up with it about 3-4 days ago. So, I'm still working on the concept. So, let me present to you some examples of Newsies.
Take your fucking ass! I want you off the fucking set, you prick! Think for one fucking second. What the fuck are you doing?
Special thanks to Christian Bale for the introduction to Newsies. Hopefully he will parlay his career in the world of animation. So let's get started. Our first bit of Newsy is from the Robert Rodriguez supposed Terminator? Oh, no, sorry, not Terminator. Predator reboot. Which will apparently not star Arnold Schwarzenegger with someone else's head on his body. But will rather be a reboot slash prequel slash reimagining, was it requel? I don't know. I really don't like these things. But apparently what's going to happen is Rose McGowan is going to be cast in this film, and she will play the filthy whore who dates the director when his marriage is in disillusion. And he's going through a divorce, and all of a sudden the predator comes down and sort of acts as a marriage counselor, you know, with his, you know, little claws that he pokes out and stabs Rose McGowan in the face, you know. So Robert Rodriguez will direct from a script by Robert Rodriguez, which the film will be edited by Robert Rodriguez, and will also be starring Rose McGowan, who is the filthy whore who is dating Robert Rodriguez. So that is an example of a newsie. Well, we take the news and then stuff it into more news to make the turducken of news articles. And another example is that Fox is already developing a X-Men Origins Deadpool reboot. You know, this movie will star, of course, Ryan Reynolds, who will reprise his role as a dude who works in a establishment called Shenanigans and tries to sleep with anything and everything that moves. You know? And he will currently be trying to woo the heart of Sandra Bullock, you know, posing as the wife to this playboy who works at a restaurant called Jenkins. So we'll look out, be on the lookout for X-Men Origins waiting to exhale. And the last bit of newsy news is that David Slade is going to be directing Eclipse, the third book by Dan Brown, who is still going to collect his royalties from the Da Vinci Code, and currently has a movie called, what was that again? Oh yeah, Angels and Demons. Yes, so he's still collecting the ye olde royalty checks from that. And speaking of the Da Vinci Code, the Blu-ray of the extended cut just came out, so watch that and give Dan Brown more money. So that brings us to another fine finish to our newsies segment. And on to our next bit of topics, which are the top 5 prime and top 5 composite list. Now, before I do this, let me introduce this segment, which is that basically a lot of people do top 10 lists, you know, top 20 AFI, top 100 movies, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, how many people do lists about lists, you know? And this is kind of where my prime and composite list comes up. Now, the prime and composite list is essentially based off the prime and composite numbers. You know, instead of saying 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, you could go 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, and so on and so forth. And composite, of course, be 2, 4, 6, and blah, 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 blah. You know? And it's kind of interesting. You know, I've also sort of developed this in podcast, you know, trying to do something a little bit different from, you know, what's actually out there. And in addition, kind of doing my own thing, you know, trying to not do the same type of podcast as a lot of people are doing, which I'm not saying are bad. I'm just saying, you know, I've only been doing this for a little bit, and I'm still trying to get my foot in. So if I sound a little off or something's not right, it's just me being me, essentially. And you know, people listen to this in the internet world, you know, who are still trying to find out what form of entertainment they should use, or, you know, it is kind of a struggle, really. I mean, especially since I'm doing this by myself, it's even harder because I have nobody to bounce ideas off of. So it's kind of hard to come up with, you know, strong pieces of entertainment for long periods of time. You know, In the past, I've tried to keep the podcast short. You know, the first podcast I did was over 2 hours long, and, you know, it's kind of hard to do a 2-hour podcast when you have no one to talk to, and basically just have to go on your gut, you know, and your notes and everything, which you have to do. So, you know, in starting this podcast, I wanted to try to be a little bit more unique, you know, sort of take what's out there and sort of turn it on its ear. And by the same token, try to do my own thing. And hopefully people listening to this will like what I have to say or don't like what I have to say, or at least, at the very least, give an opinion, because I really love this medium called movies. And, you know, in the days like iPhone 3G age, you know, I get to have a chance to talk to other people who also share some of the same passions that I do. And I really enjoy that. And now I get to do it in a more constructive form with the blog and the Twitter. And, you know, now I'm on Facebook, so that's great. So if you're listening to this, thank you for listening, and hopefully you'll be a repeat customer. So thank you for that. All right, enough of the mushy shit. Time to go into our next segment, which is one that is very close and dear to my heart. It's something that I started when I started doing the blogging thing and the Twitter. And it's one thing that I took from a Mr. Seth MacFarlane when the writer's strike came, and, you know, Fox, in all their infinite wisdom, decided to complete the episodes of Family Guy without his consent or input. And he called that, and to this day I still have that article, he called it a colossal dick move, which I agree with. I mean, you know, going ahead and doing that without his knowledge or his input is very dickish. It's dick and you. So, having said that, this week's colossal dick move sort of involves a certain Miss California. Now, I usually don't do gossip and things like that because it can all just be ending up being complete bullshit, you know. And one thing people don't like is if you do entire things that are essentially complete bullshit, you know. But I just had to, you know, sort of hone in on this whole Carrie Prejean phenomenon, you know. Ever since she was on that stage and she said all those anti-gay marriage remarks, you know, and sticking to her guns and her faith, it's been kind of like a really cheesy soap opera that plays out. And now, this week, literally about a day or two before I recorded this podcast, it's been revealed that Carrie Prejean had taken some topless photos. Some topless photos that happened to reach the internets, as George W. Bush, former president of the United States, used to call it, the internets, sort of got a hold of these topless photos, apparently taken when she was 17 years old. Now, being the intrepid journalist that I am, you know, I love me some boobies. And I don't care if they come from the most racist, anti-Semite bigot. You know, I love some double D breasts. Okay? And these breasts, you know, I felt a little dirty kind of looking at it because she said she was 17 when she took them, which means that she was underage, which also means that whoever took these photos will be going to jail for a long time. Hopefully. Fingers crossed. But having seen this, I mean, come on. This is the woman who said up on national television that she supports the idea of banning gay marriage. in front of Perez Hilton, no less. You know, and he's about the straightest man I know. You know, he 100% loves him some boobies. But, you know, the question I want to ask myself is, do I want to hate this person, or do I want to love this person? Because she has to get the smartest dumb person I've ever seen in my life. I mean, first she goes up on stage and says these remarks, okay, right in front of someone who asked the question, who happens to be gay, alright, and basically puts herself out on front seat with her religion and her beliefs as a Christian, you know. I mean, she's from California, for God's sake. Christianity is like wiping your ass with a dollar bill from a Monopoly game. You know, that's what religion is down there. You know. But the thing of it is, after seeing the top of this photos, I mean, she clearly has a wild streak to her. I mean, if you're a Christian, and you believe in God, and you believe in the Word, and the teachings of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, then why would you take your top off? If you're 17 years old, come on. Obviously, this was a very dark and time period in her life. You know, she was going through some things, she was experimenting in high school. You know, she may have smoked a little bit of the doobage, but hey, we all make mistakes, all of us. Even runner-ups from Miss United States of America. And, you know, I like that she said it attacks her integrity as a woman. You know, well, I'm offended by that. You know, as a fellow person who is a fan of, you know, the nipples and the areolas. It just offends me because, you know, if you're taking topless photos and you're a Christian and you happen to hate gay marriage, you're not really a woman. You're more of a wild child. You're more one of those, you know, people who like to grow hair under their armpits and speak of true love, peace, man. Okay? So, Miss Prejean, I don't know how to feel about you. On the one hand, I'm not much for, you know, banning gay marriage. I mean, if two men want to get married, let them get married. Let them suffer in peace and holy matrimony. Okay? But on the other hand, you want me to like you because you have some nice titties? I mean, you're a Christian, and you have nice titties. I mean, if you got it, flaunt it. You know? And besides, I've seen the photos. It's nothing that has been seen in, like, Britney Spears videos. It's nothing that has been seen Justin Timberlake, Sierra song, or whatever. You know, it's nothing that has been seen in, like, every fucking music video you can think of. Shit, even country music videos have sexy, raunchy, quote-unquote, themes in it. You know, I left my wife for a transvestite, you know, stuff like that. But, Miss Prejean, could you please pick a side? You know, do you want me to hate you because you're a bigot, or do you want me to like you because you pose topless? You know, you showed your boobage out there, and now it's on the internet for people to see. Now, let me ask you this, Ms. Prejean. You know, does Perez Hilton get a feel of the boobies? Because clearly he's not turned on by a topless whore. You know, let him get a free pass to feel the boobage. You know, and speaking of the boobage, you know, we also found out in another colossalier, dickier move that the pageant officials actually paid for her breast implants. So obviously, at 17, we are seeing the au naturel breast disease of Carrie Prejean, which is another fucking colossal dick move. I mean, why mess with perfection? Okay? I'm a man. Okay? I am a man. And, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of breasts they are, it's as long as the breasts. And if these were, in fact, taken when she was underage, then I, as a man, feel kind of dirty. And I will feel sorry for not doing that. And to be honest with you, I didn't want to see the photos anyway. But I felt I had to, as a man, you know, because hey, how oftentimes do you get to see breasts? You know. I mean, come on. I gotta see the ass in a really terrible movie. You know, a few seconds of ass saved 90 minutes of screen time that I wasted on Spirit. Okay? If I can get through that, I can get through anything. So, Miss Prejean, I implore you, I beg of you, you were the runner-up in Miss USA. Don't be the runner-up in whether I want to hate you or love you. Pick a side. Pick first place. Just hurry the fuck up, because I'm getting sick and tired of being sick and tired of looking at those breasts and thinking, I want to, but I just can't tell. Okay? So thank you, Miss Prejean. Thank you. Thank you very much. But I kind of got off a little track with the Carrie Prejean thing, so I wanted to get back on track with the top 5 prime and composite list. Now, I wanted to do the prime and composite list based on the non-porno movie titles. Now, these are movie titles which sound like they should be a porno, but really aren't. You know, they're actually really legitimate films. And, you know, it's always funny to snicker when you hear words like, you know, weapons of ass destruction or something like that. Or Mass Effect or Ass Effect or something like that. You know, it just makes you want to laugh. You know, so recently there have been some movie titles this year which I have found quite offensive, because these movies offend my delicate sentence as a Christian, movie-loving, booby-watching person. You know. So, with that, let's begin. These are the top 5 prime non-porno movie titles. Starting with number 11. 11 is, of course, prime number, which is would be number 5 in layman's terms for you laymans out there. So, number 11 is The Soloist. That's right. This may be a masturbation joke, but it's actually not. This is actually a legitimate film that came out about a couple weeks ago, starring Jamie Foxx and Robert Downey Jr. Now, of course, they don't get it on, you know, in the masturbation sense. But it is nice to know that The Soloist is not the instrument that I was thinking about, but rather is about a violinist, you know. And my mind was completely in the gutter when I heard this. You know, I mean, The Soloist? I mean, I don't want to watch porn. I want to watch art, you know. And it turned out that it was actually art. And it's not a bad film. You know, I've seen it. And it does take a little liberties with the true story. But, you know, I liked it for what it was trying to do. Not necessarily what it did, but what it was, you know, trying to do. And, you know, Jamie Foxx and Robert Downey Jr. definitely do a good job. And, you know, Joe Wright isn't a bad director. So, you know, I highly recommend you see this film. Don't go see it if you want to masturbate. You know, if you're going to do that shit, do it at home. Wait for the DVD. I highly recommend it. Okay? Next up on the top 5 is actually number 4. So this is the number 7 prime number. Okay? So at number 7 would be, and that movie would be Underworld Rise of the Lycans. Now, I know what you're thinking. This doesn't sound like a porn title. You know, because Lycan could be anything, you know. Rise of the Lycan, get it? Because it's, you know, it's a metaphor for the penis. Had to go a little bit farther than that one, which brings me to my next composite number. I kind of went a little far with that one, you know. Underworld, Rise of the Lycans, you know. Speaking of rising, you know, let's do another bit of rising here. Okay, and this movie is actually upcoming. I'm in trouble now, alright? And that's number 5. Which would be number 3 in Laban's turn for you Labans out there. Alright? And that is G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. Okay, now Cobra, that's a definite one. You know, my Cobra is rising. Okay, because of this movie. I saw the trailer, kick fucking ass. The movie will probably suck fucking ass. But I gotta tell you, Rising of the Cobra, definitely a metaphor or something. Maybe they're compensating? Hey, if the Lycans can rise, the Cobra can rise too. So think of a Lycan as sort of the metaphor for the vagina, and the Cobra as the metaphor for the non-vagina, and we'll call it a day. Okay? Come on, I'm working on fumes here. So, okay, Underworld Rise of the Lycans, vagina. G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, penis. You got it? Good. Okay. On to number 2. Or number 3, rather. And this should be a good one for all you people out there in listening land. Fast and Furious. Now, this could be anything. This could be a movie about masturbation. This could be about rough sex. It could be about S&M, whips, chains, leathers, whatever. I mean, that's what I thought. I mean, but when you add the D's and the Walker in there and the Rodriguez, you know, and the Georgiana Brewster, you know, it's like a four-way waiting to happen. I mean, the movie sucks. I gotta admit. I mean, you think after 4 tries, they get it right once, and they actually did the first time, which was pretty enjoyable. But, you know, we call it Fast and Furious. You can't help but snicker, right? And, of course, the number 2 film, which would be the number 1 film in layman's terms, is, of course, one of my more subtle versions, rather than the Rising of the Cobra, you know, is, of course, Taken. Okay? You know, taking virginity? Someone's daughter gets kidnapped. I mean, someone's daughter gets kidnapped, and, you know, she seems very virginal. You know, never had sex, never been kissed. Her friend, Amanda, on the other hand, has probably been kissed in places that I don't even want to think about. Alright? Because, you know, when you think about the word taken, you know, taken my virginity, taken me from the backside, you know, taken by trees, you know, taking it to the streets, you know, so many different subtleties, so many different references to this particular word. And that's why it's my number 1, because it's a lot more subtle than, say, Rising of the Cobras. You know, because, you know, taken could mean anything in the porno world, you know. And I'm really excited about what the proposed Taken 2 is going to be titled. Because his daughter's already been kidnapped, and he pretty much killed everybody that was associated with that kidnapping. So, what are you going to do now? You know, you're going to kidnap the mom? You're going to kidnap the douchebag husband? What are you going to do? You know, I mean, I don't see a Taken 2 being anything plausible, because the daughter's already been kidnapped, the friend is dead. You know, what else is there? I mean, you can't kidnap her again. That's just retarded. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, you can't kidnap her again. That's just mentally challenged. But I'm really excited about what to see, because I actually enjoyed Taken, you know. And it was sad to hear that Liam Neeson's wife died in that horrible skiing accident. But, you know, you enjoy things like that, and you hope to see the positive ends of it. Because when you do, I would love to see Liam Neeson get kidnapped, and then having Maggie Grace having to rescue her dad. You know, and calling up his home buddies, and, you know, trying to learn all the martial arts moves, and, you know, taking the husband. You know, and the wife joins in, the mother, you know, in for some ass kicking. And at the end, they snap the neck of the douchebag husband. So I would very much love to enjoy a movie like Taken. You know, it's not a porno, but it's kind of close. I mean, Amanda is a slut. Let me admit that. Her friend Amanda is a slut, and I really hate her. I mean, I'm all for sluts, But she was just stupid. Okay? Just fucking stupid. And I'm not going to get into it because I can do an entire podcast about what I think of Amanda's character in Taken. But watch Taken. Get the extended cut because the PG-13 version is basically watered down bullshit. So watch Taken. And we're now going to do the top 5 composite numbers that involve actual porno titles that are based on actual movies. So, starting at number 12, or finishing, rather, is The Sopranos. I got nothing to say about this because, you know, I don't get to watch a lot of porn anymore, and which is sad. But in the end, it's probably for the best seeing all the porn that's out there. So, at number 5 would be The Sopranos, you know. And I would love to hear the theme song of that movie. Excuse me. It's a woke up this morning, got yourself some cum, got yourself some cum, got yourself some go. Yeah, it's disgusting, I know. And number 4 is, number 4, which would be number 9. I think, on the composite number list, which is kind of interesting, but not at the same time. I mean, you know, I would love to see a movie that would tackle on this, you know, based on the porno titles, and that is The Adventures of A. Rocky and Bill Winkler. Ugh, my God. You can't believe what is in this movie. You know, just looking at the synopsis is... it's disgusting, trust me. You know, disgusting. And, of course, the number 3 version, or should I say... what should I say after saying A. Winkle and Bill... what's his face? The number 8 version of it is going to be very stupid. It's American Booty. Okay? There, I said it. American Booty. You're welcome. And of course, there's Analyze These, which is number 6. Analyze These. I mean, you gotta be kidding. These titles suck. They suck cock. They suck balls. They suck whatever you like. But I gotta tell you, whoever thought these up have got to be the dumbest people in the world. And then there's the Ass Detective that's based off of Ace Ventura. I can't think of it right now. I had it written down. It was like Face Ventura, Ass Detective, or something like that. It was... ugh. And of course, number 1 on my top list is a... one is going to be disgusting. And that is... Fargo. Fargo is a porno. Did you know that? Because I didn't. It's a Cohen porn. That's right, folks. The Coens made a porno. A movie that was so good, I had to jack off to it because how amazing the cinematography is. You know, the rich and subtle character arcs and the bodies in the wood chipper and the snowy landscapes and the wonderful comic stylings of William H. Macy. So, Fargo is my number 1 non-porno title. So, because a movie that good, you just have to say, you just have to strike it to it. You just have to. So, that concludes the top 5 prime and top 5 composite numbers list. I hope you enjoy that, because that'll probably be something I do like every now and then. So before we move on to, or before I move on to, I should say, because I'm starting to hear an echo now. Before I move on to that lovely review of X-Men Origins Wolverine, I would just like to share something that's been a little close to my heart a little bit ever since this movie was announced. And that is, you know, with all the sequels and reboots and reimaginings and recalls and all that stuff I was talking about before, you know, what would be an origin of an origin story? You know, what else would be there to learn about, you know, our favorite characters? I mean, if Eastern Promises can come with a sequel, that movie left itself open for a world of possibilities. You know, granted, there's only so many places it can go, but I would love to see those possibilities. Now, Wolverine, he's been more of a mysterious character. You know, he's lost his memory, you know, doesn't know who he is, he has his dog tag, say Logan, but what does Logan mean? You know, and who's this Wolverine person? But, you know, what would be the basis for having a story that explains the story? You know, like, do I really want to know how bacon is made? You know, do I want to see an X-Men Origins, you know, bacon story? I mean, does that interest people to know how this guy became brooding and evil? It was actually when the origin story is one of the things I hated about the Halloween remake. Because, first of all, it was so terribly done. Second of all, that movie was horrible. But mainly, that whole idea that you have to explain the motivations behind these characters is something that I don't think a lot of people actually care about. I mean, Jason, you know, he wasn't even in the first Friday the 13th movie. But we had a sense of, you know, how troubled and disturbing that boy was. You know, that he drowned while two people were having sex in the Crystal Lake. You know, and so we got that sort of backstory without having to have an actual amount of screen time dedicated to the backstory. And, you know, I think people spend so much time in sort of milking something that's all it's worth for money and personal gain. You know, not just fan service. You know, I'm pretty sure there are people out there who want to know how Wolverine became Wolverine. And we all know how it is. But at the same time, you sort of appreciate the mysteriousness behind the Logan. You know, why does he have his adamantium claws? You know, how can he develop his powers? Like, we don't know that. You know, he can do all these things and we don't know where he even came from. We don't even know if Logan is his real name. You know? And, you know, people start doing prequels and things like that. I don't want to see a Blade Runner prequel. You know, I don't want to see what happened. How did Decker become a replicant? Things like that. You know, the movie already does a good job at sort of giving this story within the story. There's no need to take another story and make an entire movie about it. Okay? And I just don't feel it's right sometimes. I mean, when you look at some of the great horror films of all time, like A Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, they spend, like, so much time, like, maybe that much, you know, a little bit dedicated to the backstory. You know, okay, guy does this, now he's out for revenge. That's it, that's all you need to know. But then you have entire movies dedicated to the backstory. Or you have, like, half of a movie specifically to sort of explain the motivations of this character. This evil, terrifying, brooding character. But in the end, I don't think people really care. I don't care. In fact, I think that gives it one of its strengths. You know, one of the things that made Halloween so terrifying is that this boy is so troubled. He killed his sister. He killed his family. For pretty much no reason. And, you know, we don't need those motivations. I mean, when you think about the man with no name, he has no name. I mean, if he had a name, it would destroy that sort of mysteriousness about him. If we knew who he was, if we knew what his backstory was, I don't think that would be as effective as, say, having someone just riding the town, this mysterious stranger. In fact, if you look at the special features on the DVD, A Fistful of Dollars, there's a prologue that was actually added by the network so that it would explain the motivations of the man with no name. It didn't give him a name, thank God, but it did sort of explain away his sort of reasons for being there. And, you know, I don't like that. You know, especially not in that classic film. You know, if I knew all about the man with no name, where he came from, what his actual name was, you know, how'd he get so good at shooting people? I don't know. I don't care. Because it's one of the things that makes that movie what it is, that mysteriousness. You know, you sort of learn things as you go along. I mean, if you want to tell me certain things, sort of drop hints. You know, let me know while the movie's going on. Don't tell me. You know, don't explain the mystery away. And that's how I feel, you know, once I get into review, you'll understand why. But that's how I feel with X-Men Origins Wolverine, is that too much of the mystery is gone. You know, once you figure out who Logan is, or what he was, or what he had done before, you know, it's like, he's no longer Wolverine. You know, he's just, you know, another character in the superhero lexicon. You know, and all the things that sort of made him unique, or what he was, is sort of like, okay, that's it, that's what I figured out. You know, and there's two words that I want to say, and I'll say this for the review. There's two words where I want to say that kind of said to myself, why would you put it in this movie? Why the fuck is it in this movie? And you'll find out soon enough. But the whole thing with the origin story, you know, Heroes were going to do a series of origin things where they're going to do, like, the origin of the characters. But those are characters that we haven't even met yet. Stories we have yet to know. You know. And it's kind of stupid because once you explain something, you have to stick by that. And Heroes is an example of how not to do it, because they have origins, but they don't stick with the origins that they establish. And then they fuck up everything else. So, when you have that, it's sort of interesting to see, but by the same token, it takes away any sort of enjoyment that you would have had in the future. Because now you know who these people are, where they came from, you know, what type of food they eat, you know, did they eat their chips with a knife or a fork, whatever. And that's one of the reasons why I'm kind of weary about the Star Trek movie, because that's an origin story too. Although it's a movie which hasn't had that origin explained necessarily, you know. The Enterprise, Captain Kirk, the crew, everything. You know, but one of the things that I'm worried about most in the Star Trek film, and one thing I think people will realize, is that, is that movie canon? You know, is Star Trek, the J.J. Abrams-directed film, canon? Is it something we can take to our graves and say that this is the definitive explanation of Captain Kirk's origin? And the answer to that is, it scares the shit out of me. Because if it is, and it sucks, then that's the movie we have to go by. That is the definition of the origin of Captain Cook and his Cook. Captain Kirk and his crew. That's what we have to go by. And that, for one thing, scares the shit out of me. Now, I've seen Star Trek. You know, I saw it in advance, so I got out of the way. And I won't talk about it until next week when I talk about Star Trek. But, you know, needless to say, I like that movie. I really, really like that movie. And canon or not, I really think that J.J. Abrams did good by the Star Trek universe. But getting back to the idea of origin stories, you know, when you do the origin, you have to do it right. you know, if you're going to explain how these people came to be, you better know what they do, who they are, what they had for breakfast, what kind of clothes they wear. You have to know these things. You have to plan these things out. Because if you just say, okay, we've had this character in this movie. Okay? Now we're going to explain his backstory. Which is exactly what they're doing. They're going to do, they've actually announced they're going to do an X-Men Origins Deadpool. Now, I like Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool. But in a Deadpool movie, I'm not so sure about, because his part was so small that if it was expanded to like 90 minutes, I would hate that character. I would hate Deadpool. And I actually like Deadpool in X-Men Origins Wolverine. So, that's another thing. Doing the film just for financial reasons. You know, oh, people like X-Men Origins Wolverine, so maybe like X-Men Origins Deadpool. You know, oh, people like Star Trek, but Star Trek Nemesis sucked. So, let's try it again, and hopefully it'll break the curse of the odd number, even number, fifth movie, you know, Star Trek lexicon movie knowledge. So, everything that I put my fears in going into Star Trek, I put my fears in Wolverine. And, speaking of Wolverine, which I'll get into in about a minute or so, but I just want to close on the origin thing, is that, you know, stop doing origin films unless you're going to do it right. You know, if you have an interesting story to tell about this particular character, tell it. But tell it first. Or tell it in a way that people actually buy. Don't sell it to us and say, if you like this movie, you'll like this movie. Don't. Because we're not going to buy it either. You know, we're not, and I feel deep down that people will, as they get sort of smarter about their movie watching experience, they'll realize the pieces of shit that are actually out there, and they'll realize that they better save their money, because in today's economy, you don't want to waste your money on shitty entertainment, especially something that's purporting itself to be entertaining shit, you know. So keep your fingers crossed for that one, and I'll talk about Star Trek more next week. But now we're going to get into our review, the Never Fear Desert of the Real review of X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Whatever the reason is you're doing this, focus on that. Maybe it will help.
Trust me, I've been through worse.
Away.
Yes, Sabretooth. Yes, they were. And speaking of shiny, this whole film seems to have this wonderful gloss over it. Namely, lots and lots of bad CGI. Now, don't get me wrong, this movie was very entertaining. Very, very entertaining. But once you walk out the theater and sort of have a chance to think about it, you kind of reach the same conclusion I saw, which is that from a filmmaking perspective, this movie is... it's a lot of wasted opportunities. You know? And it seems to me like all the reshoots and all the bad press that it sort of got beforehand, especially since the work print leaked all over the internet like a hooker with a dysentery. This whole thing seems to reek of Fox-itis, you know, a bad, bad case of Fox-itis. Even before the film actually came out, they announced these Easter eggs that were going to be peppered throughout multiple screenings of X-Men Origins. But the thing they failed to mention is which, you know, particular screenings are going to have the different endings. So, for instance, I might walk into a theater, see one ending, and then go to another completely different theater on the other side of town and see the exact same thing. It doesn't work. They fail. Because they didn't plan this whole thing out. They said, oh my god, someone leaked the entire Wolverine movie on the internet. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to put all these different endings in the movie and not tell anybody which ones they put in. Because that way people will have to watch Wolverine just to spot which sequence is going to play over the credits. And that, my friends, is bad fucking marketing. That's essentially what you would call, in the Marvel Universe, damage control. You know, and my friends, I gotta tell you, it didn't work. Because after seeing this movie once, chances are, I'm probably gonna wait till the DVD to see all the multiple endings. Or, I'm just gonna look on YouTube and see them all anyway. Because some pirate is going to download them all, and we'll see them. And then we won't have to go to screen X or screen Y just to see, like, 30 seconds of footage. Which is more than I can say about the whole movie, because I had been looking forward to this for so long. I pre-ordered my tickets, you know, I bought the 7-Eleven Wolverine cups, stuff like that. And I was just prepared to enjoy the hell out of it, because, you know, it's the summer. You know, we just want to get our minds completely blown by this movie. And other movies after that. You know, the Transformers trailer was more entertaining than this movie. And you know why? At least that had some good CGI. You know, in the previous X-Men movie before, Wolverine's claws, you know, even though you knew in your heart they were CG, they were pretty decent CG. Especially in the first movie, which was made for not a lot of money in Hollywood studio terms. But the claws in this movie are just terrible, terrible CGI. And I'll point out one particular sequence. So before I start, yes, this review is going to have major fucking spoilers. So if you haven't seen X-Men Origins Wolverine, stop listening at this point and just go watch it like five times to see the different endings. So, getting back to my point, the X-Men Origins bad CGI is not as bad as it is during the sink scene. And people will know what I'm talking about because there's a scene where Wolverine is sort of examining his new adamantium claws, and he starts, you know, slicing together, and the sparks are flying and stuff like that. And then he slices the sink in half, and that's pretty funny in and of itself. But the claws themselves look so horribly obviously CGI. I mean, it's apparent that you're going to have them CGI them anyway, but. But the CGI excuse me. The CGI in this movie is so bad. You know, and don't get me started on the whole Deadpool fight scene. Because, oh man, that whole thing where they were standing on top of the plume or whatever the fuck you call it, that entire thing you could tell was a CG. They were nowhere near the top of anything. You know, and it's even as simple as when Wolverine is just walking down, you know, is walking on the island, and you can tell that whole entire screen, maybe like 90% of that screen is CGI. You know, and, you know, it's things like that just take you out of the movie. Like, when I saw those things, I was like, that the claws should be the simplest thing on the entire fucking arsenal. Just have them hold some claws and slice them with it. You mess up the simplest thing in the entire world. The claws are very simple, okay? If the first X-Men movie could make the claws look somewhat realistic, why can't X-Men Origins Wolverine do the same thing? Okay? You know, and anything involving a helicopter or a vehicle, and you see Hugh Jackman or whoever, it's usually CGI, because I'm not going to risk the star, you know, crashing into a tree or something. But the way they did it was like Photoshop. You know, it's like they took a picture and the green screen just had them, let him do whatever he wanted. I mean, you know, I was so disappointed by the special effects in this film. You know, and I wanted to like it. I wanted to like it so bad, and I couldn't. But it's not just the CGI, it's also the mechanics of the movie as a whole. I mean, you're talking about the origin of one of the baddest badasses in the history of badassery. And you're going to just fuck up his storyline, you know? And in a movie which is essentially an origin tale, there's too much origin, you know? The movie literally starts in, like, the 1800s, where James, as he's called, kills a man with bone claws. Bone claws! Come on, really? Okay, if he's killing people throughout 150 years of history with bone claws, don't you think at some point they could have broken? Because Sabretooth was obviously able to break them by just stepping on them. You don't think that someone wearing armor or like Kevlar vest could just, you know, stick their chest out and block the bone claws and they just break? Jesus Christ, are you serious? You know, and the bone claws, fucking bone claws, and he uses them to kill the man who turned out to be his father, and had that wonderful, like, line of dialogue when he says, "He wasn't your father, son." You know, I love when, you know, a person's death rattle can also be used as exposition. You know, it's the same thing I saw with Australia, where the bearded dude died, and he got trampled by so many cattle. And, you know, he's sitting there, his lungs are crushed in, he's a mess. And he's like, "The spear, and then he dies, you know, and, oh man, like, that whole opening scene, it felt like an entirely different movie, with Logan sort of placed into it, like, it literally felt different. I did love the opening credits, you know, that permeated throughout, and, you know, whenever there was a still shot, it looked like sepia toned, it's kind of like, almost picture, literally like a picture. But, you know, the whole idea that Logan was actually born in, like, the 1800s, and him and Sabretooth are brothers, like, I can get behind that idea, but the way the movie executes it is horrendous. You know, and the kid who plays Logan James, whatever the fuck his name is supposed to be, he's a terrible actor. His berserker rage, like yell, it bleeds my ears to no end. And I'm still trying to get over that Wolverine as a kid would sound like that, with a claw sticking out of his. It was terrible. And, you know, the whole thing with them sort of being together throughout this history and being connected is kind of like, okay, they're brothers, they fight, blah, blah, blah. It's like sibling rivalry, essentially. And, you know, it's like saying when Juggernaut is Professor Xavier's half-brother. You know, people are going to fight. You know, brothers and sisters, they're going to fight. You know, these two just happen to have superpowers. So, it's good to just let them have at it, almost. But that whole thing with the opening was terrible. And then, you know, all the interesting people are actually the guys that Stryker recruits. So, like, people like Deadpool and Blob, you know, and, you know, those people are pretty interesting, but they only get, like, that much screen time. I mean, one of my favorite characters, other than Wolverine, of course, and Sabretooth, because I really like Sabretooth, was Deadpool, played by Ryan Reynolds. And Ryan Reynolds is, I actually like him in sort of, like, comedy roles. I think he's funny. A lot of people don't find him funny, but I think he's funny. And, you know, he has that great line where they're in the elevator and Stryker's like, the Kree really brings up the seriousness in your eyes, and always laughing, cracking up at that. But I wish he had more scenes with him as Wade, you know, because I could honestly get behind that. And, of course, they're going to make a Deadpool spinoff, but I'm not too crazy about Deadpool movie so much as I am about Deadpool the character. Now, the thing that really made me mad was all this stuff that involved Deadpool at the end. Because Deadpool at the end was essentially Baraka from Mortal Kombat, and that's exactly what he looked like to me. I mean, the minute I saw the sword come out of his arms, that was Baraka. You know, and he has that face where he's just like, his eyes are like all coked up and shit. That's Baraka from Mortal Kombat. And, you know, Stryker has that command where he types in, you know, like, decapitate and things like that. I want, you know, I was thinking the whole time, I want him to type in the words, "Finish him! Dun, dun, dun. Toasty, 3D." You know, I just wanted him to say those words and, like, relieve me of any tension that I might have had. But, yeah, like, people like Deadpool and the teleportation guy and Gambit, you know, those guys were interesting, but they only have, like, very little screen time. You know? And it sucked that they were only able to put in those characters for, like, 5 minutes worth of dialogue. Because they're actually pretty good. You know, I mean, the Blob had his little bit with the boxing, and Wolverine had his moment where he had on boxing gloves and he had the claws come out of the boxing gloves. I mean, that was pretty cool. That whole thing was pretty funny. And, you know, there's some humorous moments, but there are also, like, moments that aren't necessarily meant to be funny, but they are funny. Like, when I mentioned the horrible CGI, the worst CGI, other than the scene that takes place in the sink, in the bathroom of the farmer home, was when the Gambit-Wolverine fight, where Wolverine sort of has Gambit's on the platform in the balcony, and Wolverine starts slicing the ladder out from under Gambit so the platform lowers. And when you see that, it's something, it's like something out of a Wile E. Coyote cartoon. And I was laughing. I was trying to laugh loud because it was hilarious. Seeing that, like, he was going, and he was doing really fast, and the music was swelling up in the background. And it was supposed to be a really serious, tense moment, like, oh my god, he's going to kill the chef, Gambit. But it was funny as hell. It's like Gambit was the Roadrunner, and Wolverine was Wile E. Coyote, and he was trying to chop and chop and chop and chop and chop and chop. You know, but that whole it was terrible. And then the scene that was exploited in the trailer was when Wolverine is being chased by the army guys, particularly Zero, and he slices the ground so he can make a U-turn on the bike. It actually looks better than it did in the trailer, because the trailer was probably an unfinished version of that scene, but the one I saw when it was in the theater was actually looked pretty decent. And he makes a U-turn on a bike with his claws, and then he manages to get hang time on enough so he can rise to the helicopter and hang onto the helicopter and slice the little propellers off. You know, and first of all, that whole thing looked unconvincing. And secondly, the idea of Wolverine destroying a helicopter, you know, just by exploding and jumping off is in itself pretty cool. It's very 80s. You know, it's very 80s. So it was nice to see sort of the late 80s, early 90s mentality sort of spill over into a film that's made in 2009. That was awesome. So kudos to you, X-Men Origins Wolverine, for that. And the action was actually pretty interesting, too. I mean, you have that one fight with Sabretooth and Wolverine in the bar, and that was cool. If pretty much all the action scenes were like that one scene, I would totally get behind this movie. Totally. Because, you know, it's just basically two guys with superpowers just going at it. Just going at each other. And it's also good to see that there's less CGI for the little moments and CGI used for the really big moments. Like, obviously the fight with the claws and everything, you have to use kind of like CGI for that. But when it involves Wolverine being crushed by a bunch of logs, yeah, CGI you definitely need. And it was actually pretty convincing when the logs fell on Wolverine. I gotta say that. That was pretty good. But if they were all like that, then I wouldn't have anything to say. Now, a lot of time is dedicated to the Strikers Island, where all the experiments are being taken place. And you see all the mutants that have been captured, you see Emma Frost, and I was actually surprised to see Scott Summers in this movie, before it was Cyclops, obviously. But there's really no explanation for why he has the glasses. I mean, I guess he knows about his superpower, and he knows that he can shoot fire out of his eyes. But, you know, it's pretty obvious that something's wrong with you when you have red glasses. And, you know, where is a kid who's in high school going to get red glasses? Despite the fact that he's trying to keep his, you know, mutant power secret. And apparently, for what I've seen in the X-Men Origins universe, mutants aren't yet sort of the outcasts of the world. You know, people know about it, but they don't really fear them like they do in the previous movies. So it was kind of weird to see him with the ruby glasses. Even though no one's really said anything about him, like, shooting fire from his eyes. So that was cool. And Sabretooth had this great line there where he's like, "The duck for shades, don't you think?" Right before he tries to eviscerate Cyclops, which is pretty cool. Speaking of Sabretooth, like, he was the best part of this movie. I mean, aside from Hugh Jackman, which I really like as Wolverine. I mean, he really made that role his own. And, you know, now he's the producer on this film. And so he really wants to make the Wolverine character work. And you see it in this film. But Sabretooth takes the entire fucking cake and eats it. Because him, as played by Liev Schreiber, is fucking sadistic. I mean, this guy will kill and maim again. you know, and you really feel it in his inflections, his movements, you know, the way he talks. I mean, it's all very terrifying. I mean, the Sabretooth in X-Men, played by Tyler Mayne, was pretty tame. You know, he pretty much had been declawed. You know, you really didn't get that whole Wolverine-Sabretooth dynamic like you should have. But here you do, and it's great. You know, I'm still a little shaken about the whole We're Brothers thing. But, you know, him and Logan were awesome. And the whole dynamic between them was very well done. And I really liked that. And of course, there's the infamous line that was in the trailer that got cut. But you can hear it in its entire glory where Sabretooth goes, "Do you even know how to kill me?" And Wolverine goes, "I'm going to cut your goddamn head off. See if that works." And Sabretooth just smiles that cheeky, toothy smile of his. That's awesome. But, you know, another one that I shouldn't forget to mention is Gambit. Now, Gambit, played by Taylor Kitsch, is, you know, he's sort of a non-entity. You know, he's basically just there to tag along with Wolverine while he kills the fuck out of people. But, you know, I don't think Taylor Kitsch is, you know, from New Orleans in real life, but he certainly has a convincing enough Cajun accent that I can buy it. Like, if he used his real voice, or if that is his real voice or whatever, you know, it was fine. You know, a little thick, but fine. It definitely slipped up a little bit where he wasn't talking like the Raging Cajun. And you could tell sometimes when he didn't. But it was pretty good. I mean, he twirled that stick like there was no tomorrow. And there wasn't enough with the cards to sort of go, "Woo, Gambit!" You know, it was just that, like, he threw the cards in the air and he tossed them around. You know, so that was pretty much it for the cards. But I would really have loved him, like, have a deck of cards and just throw them at people and be like, "Your deal." Like that. And just throw them at people and just kill the shit out of them. But that's too bad. But I really expected a lot more from the mutant universe. I mean, if you're going to have mutants, use them. You know, I mean, Deadpool had this great moment where a bullet was going towards him, and he sliced the bullet in half. And then the two halves of the bullet hit two of the henchmen behind him. I mean, that is cool. That is cool. But, you know, you can't help but, for every cool moment like that, there's about 1,000 other uncool moments that you don't like. There's this whole entire thing with, once Wolverine becomes Weapon X, he runs away completely buck naked. He somehow manages to get off the island without any clothes on. I might take that back. I mean, he might have been on land, and he wasn't on the island. But he was able to get out of that compound completely naked, and somehow make it to these you know, down-hole little house in the prairie farm people, and, you know, run there naked. I mean, I'm guessing all the ladies really like the Hugh Jackman ass that they got to see, whatever bits there were. Because they were really trying to hide that. They're like, "Okay, we're going to give them, like, this much booty, and then we're going to cut. That much booty, then we're going to cut." I mean, if you can show Hugh Jackman bathing in Australia, you can do pretty much anything. Okay? So, there's this whole entire subplot with the farm people, and the old dude has his happens to have, like, a really fairly recent Harley Davidson bike. I'm like, "Dude, you live in a farm. Where do you have time to ride a motorcycle?" And there seemed to be something going on with the son, and the son's jacket fit, and I didn't get that part, because that was completely throwaway. And, you know, then, of course, the shit hits the fan when Zero kills the Little House on the Prairie family. And, you know, there's an old trick where you use something as blood rather than actual blood. In this case, it was, ironically enough, OJ was used as the aforementioned blood. You know? And in this case, like, it's like Hellboy, where Hellboy is fighting that thing that splits in two every time it dies. And it used, I believe, gumballs as blood, or was it like subway tokens or something like that, as blood. In this case, it was orange juice. Nice touch, Gavin Hood, director of Sotsi. But yeah, she was shot not once, but twice. By Zero. You know. So, she dies, and then the dude gets shot in the arm. And then he gives his death rattle exposition speech. You know what? There were so many, like, dying moments where people just explain plot that I might do something for that on next week's podcast when I review another origin film, Star Trek. Because there were so many. There was the one where Wolverine's girlfriend dies, like, the second time. And she delivers, like, exposition like there's no tomorrow. And she's like, everything leading up to that was terrible. I mean, the guy cannot catch a break. I mean, first he gets adamantium claws, you know, then he kills his father, you know, his fake father dies, and he kills his real father, you know, then he's stuck with this sadistic asshole for a brother, then he joins a team that's just as sadistic as the sadistic asshole brother. Then he gets adamantium claws, and on top of that, his girlfriend dies, only to come back to life, and then die for real. So, it was very jarring between trying to figure out where Wolverine was going. So, the whole thing just basically boiled down to a sibling rivalry, just like a colossal dick measuring contest. You know, like, who's got the biggest claws? You know, and that could be fine for most people, but it's not fine for me because I was expecting a lot more from Wolverine. And after all the behind-the-scenes stuff and the reshoots and everything like that, I was expecting them to at least sort of fix some of the problems that they may have had. And, you know, unfortunately, with the piracy going on and Wolverine being spread onto the internet, I think it may have destroyed any sort of credibility it may have had left. And, you know, I mean, guys like Stryker, you know, and his Weapon S program. You know, that whole thing was pretty flawed, too. Because, you know, if you're trying to create the ultimate weapon, but you want them to have none of the weaknesses of the other characters, don't you think you want to take a little bit more time before you release it? I mean, he was very impatient, that guy. I mean, he wanted to kill Wolverine, but I'm pretty sure he had something waiting in the rings. You know, he should have had, like, a Weapon 9 or something. You know, instead of killing everybody, he could have used them all to kill Wolverine. Instead, he put them all his eggs in one basket, and then didn't finish the process so that Deadpool might be indestructible. Although, from what I hear, one of the screenings has a scene where Deadpool is actually alive, which is hard to believe because Wolverine cut his fucking head off, and then in a Star Wars Episode 1 kind of way, the head and the body are separate, and the head is spinning around destroying the cone, you know, so that was pretty cool. But, you know, if you're going to make an indestructible monster, finish the goddamn process, please. Please. And all that stuff with, you know, this whole movie sort of had daddy issues. Daddy issues and sibling rivalries and just dick measuring contests, you know, because Stryker had that issue with his son, and his son killed his wife and things like that. And then Wolverine killed his father, and his foster father died, and, you know, Sabretooth just killed everybody. And Wolverine didn't like it that much. You know, so it's all about just the siblings and family and things like that. You know, that whole instance of family and, you know, sticking together. You know, all that in a kick-ass film could have been done so much better. And it could have been done in an entirely different movie, but it wasn't. And it all combined to make a jumbling, grueling mess of a film. Which, I'm sad to say, I did like certain parts. You know, I like Deadpool, and I like Wolverine, of course, and Sabretooth. And, you know, Danny Houston wasn't bad. I mean, I really dug him as the vampire guy in 30 Days a Night. You know, but, you know, and him as Stryker, he wasn't, you know, he definitely underplayed it, but, you know, Stryker's supposed to be like this very idealistic guy. You know, he's really strong belief, almost in a state of psychosis. You know, and he amounted to nothing more than a crazy mad scientist, you know, trying to create his Frankenstein monster. And that is not what I expected. Because, you know, if you're going to get into the beginnings of Wolverine and the Weapon X program and the hunting of mutants for experimentation, you can't base it all on daddy issues. You can't base it all on, like, family moments. Oh, my son killed my wife. You know, and, you know, so my solution to taking out my rage is to hunt down a bunch of people, kill them, and take their powers. I mean, how does that evolve? You know, how does Stryker's backstory evolve? You know, maybe we need X-Men Origins William Stryker. Because, you know, Danny Houston did bring a little bit to the role, but the role was pretty much underwritten. You know, I think most of that is due to Skip Woods, who is sort of like the Fox whipping boy. Him and Nicholas DeTaut, you know, who was responsible for, like, the anal raping that was Hitman. You know, him and them basically like Fox's bitches. You know, like, if Fox doesn't like what is going on, they'll bring somebody like that in to sort of fix it. And they make it worse. So, F you, Fox. And, you know, I'm not saying that I hate this movie. I actually kind of like it a little bit in a sick sort of way. But the thing of it is, when you take into account everything that's going on, like the fact that, you know, the love of his life died, and his answer to that is to join up forces with William Stryker. I mean, this is the guy who basically said, watch out, Sabretooth, you know, is going to kill everybody and everyone you love. He doesn't listen, and she dies. And his portion is to go back to Stryker and find Sabretooth? I mean, you don't see anything wrong with that? I mean, it's obvious that Stryker had his own agenda. But he was so blinded by Berserker Rage that he couldn't see that Stryker was the one behind the whole thing. You know, if someone says to you, hey, you know what we want to do? We want to coat your entire bone structure with adamantium, an element which we have no fucking idea about. And we're just going to pump it into you so you can destroy this guy. No, I don't think so. I'd be like, no, thank you. I'm going to keep my half-broken bone claws, super glue them back together, and kill him anyway. You know, but that's not what he did. He blindly followed Sabretooth. And when the moment happens, when you realize that she's actually not dead, you know, it doesn't have that sort of emotional impact that it should have. You know, it really doesn't, because you find out that she's not dead, but you also realize that Wolverine, in his infinite wisdom, who has the ability to
who has that nose of his and these enhanced abilities can't just look at her and tell that she hasn't been sliced up at all? Like, Sabretooth has these really sharp fucking claws, and you don't check to see if she's been sliced open. She's got blood all over her, sure. But there's no claw marks. I mean, she didn't snap her neck. You couldn't check a pulse. You know, the juice that injected her may have seemed dead, but it looked like she was massacred. I mean, it was blood all over her. It's not like Sabretooth snapped her neck. She had blood all over her. And yet, you couldn't check for claw marks. You couldn't sniff at her and tell that Sabretooth was actually nowhere near her. You couldn't do that? Ugh, it was very weird. You know, and even though she has the powers of persuasion, she couldn't persuade him and say, Wolverine, I want you to believe that I'm dead. She was pretty much out of it to make it appear that she was, in fact, dead. And then, of course, she died for real. And speaking of death, remember those two words I was talking about? Well, here they are. Adamantium bullets. That's right, folks. Near the end of the movie, William Stryker reveals that he made 6 adamantium bullets so Wolverine would be able to forget everything he just did. It's the ultimate deus ex machina. I mean, okay, the way Stryker explains it is, if he shoots him in the head wound will heal, but he'll lose all his memories. What? So you're saying that Wolverine can get shot in the head, heal from a shot to the head, but lose his memories? And I'm like, what? You know, we already knew from X-Men 1 that Wolverine had amnesia. I never thought in a million years that anyone would think of shooting him with adamantium bullets. What is he, a werewolf? You know, is he one of the Lycans from the Underworld series? Did I miss something? Because Stryker just pulled out this gun out of fucking nowhere. It just said, it's not going to kill him, but he's going to forget everything. You know, kill Wolverine. Find a way to kill Wolverine. Don't shoot him with bullets that he'll just heal from. I'm pretty sure they hit like a motherfucker. And I like the setup to that scene where Wolverine's sort of carrying his lady into the sunset. And then you see a shot of the gun sort of rise and Stryker pulls the trigger, bang, and Wolverine falls. I'm like, ah! And he drops Kayla. He drops her, and it's so funny. And I was like, boom, aha! And then he runs straight for Stryker, and he has the perfect opportunity to shoot him point blank in the head with the adamantium bullets. I mean, does that not scream Deus Ex Machina? It's completely baffling to me how you can come up with that. How that would work in a movie to explain why Wolverine lost his memory. What? You're gonna shoot him with bullets? Huh? I mean, you could think of something better than that. You know, maybe he hit his head in an explosion, and his head could have healed from the bump, but he lost his memories. You don't shoot him with fucking bullets. You know, that's like the whole thing with Ocean's 12, where Julia Roberts, in order to fool Bruce Willis, has to pretend to be Julia Roberts. Her character has to pretend to be Julia Roberts. But at the same time, she actually looks like Julia Roberts. It's baffling how people can come up with this shit. And so, you know, of course, she shoots him twice in the head, and Wolverine wakes up and he has no idea what the fuck's going on. And, you know, he doesn't realize that he basically killed everything in his path. you know. So, to sum it up, I mean, Wolverine had so much going for it. I mean, it had Hugh Jackman, it had Liev Schreiber, you know, you finally have Gambit in a movie. And Deadpool wasn't bad either, as played by Ryan Reynolds. You know, most of the other guys, they had pretty cool stuff, but, you know, they only had, like, a little bit of screen time, so you could very easily forget about them. And I don't see an X-Men Origins Zero, you know, in anyone's future. So, I wasn't at all disappointed by what I saw. I kind of expected it going in, but, you know, between the bad CGI and the Little House on the Prairie husband and wife, and, you know, just the whole idea of adamantium bullets, you know, and Deadpool essentially, you know, not just Deadpool, but the movie itself sort of stealing elements from Mortal Kombat, you know, is just blatant, and I can't forget it for that. I mean, here was his chance to have his own movie, and they screwed him over like six ways from Sunday. And I will never forgive Fox for messing with one of my favorite characters in the comics, ever. You know, and they used the more recent version of his origin. You know, they didn't use the classic version of it, which was a big no-no, because, you know, I would have loved to see that version told in theaters instead of what was told here, so. You know, and of course, if you want to see this movie, you know, wait for the DVD so you can see the Easter egg mid-credit things. Because you shouldn't waste your money seeing the same movie four times and just having to wait for the credits to see what else is out there. I don't even know how many are out there. There could be three. There could be four. You know, we don't know. And I have my own little Easter egg in this podcast. So if you're listening to it right now, go back to it, and there's a little tiny Easter egg if you're willing to look for it, so hang on to that. But other than that, I really think I have nothing more to say about that, except, you know, no more adamantium bullets, please. And give Gambit his own movie so I can see him throw cards at people. You know, have him go into the World Series of Poker, you know, and he's losing a hand at Texas Hold'em, and then he gets real pissed off and starts to throw a card at somebody. You know, hit a showgirl and have her implants just spill out on the floor. You know, that's what I like to see. That's what I love to see. Gambit just throw cards at people. That's an entertaining movie. This was entertaining, but for the wrong reasons. So, I guess that is going to do it for the Yardstick Civilization for tonight. So, thank you for staying up with me and listening to this podcast. Join me next week when I'm going to be reviewing Star Trek, the new J.J. Abrams movie starring Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, Zoe Saldana, and a bunch of other people. So watch out for that. And if you want to contact me, you can contact the show at nocommentleftbehind@gmail.com and leave your questions, comments. You know, if you want to talk about X-Men Origins some more, I can do that as well. So look out for next week's podcast. I haven't got a title yet. Oh yes, I actually do have a title. The title of next week's show will be called The First Frontier. So look out for Volume 5, The First Frontier. So that about does it. My name is Never Fear, and this has been the Yardstick of Civilization podcast, the official podcast of Never Fears, Those of the Real, which you can find at youhave.nothingtofear.net. You can also contact me at my personal email at neverfear.imhere@yahoo.com. So it's neverfear.imhere thefuckingpodcast@gmail.com. I also have a Facebook profile. You can also see it as Never Fear, I'm Here. And I think that's it. So remember, send any emails to the show at nocommentleftbehind@gmail.com. So hopefully in the future I'll have some guests on, and you know, we'll talk about movies together, and it won't be just me rambling on and on and on. So I want to, before I officially sign off, I just want to give special thanks to Justin Vector, John Dammer, and Mr. Brian Quain from BeforeYouSubmit.com. Thank you guys. And thank you, Slash Film, for being an awesome, awesome podcast. And I hope to be chatting on that cast more often, because I've kind of been busy working on this particular venture of mine and haven't been able to do the chat room in a while. And I know they did their X-Men Origins podcast, and I'm also hoping to listen to Justin Vector's, so that should be a good one. So until next time, have no fear, because I'll be back.